The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It's Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. Starting that long slide down to Powhan Friday, it is I, your host, your anti-rush, here to share with you news and information you've got to have, what's going on in the world here. And once again, of course, the economy dominates the news. And we're going to turn to the story of Alan Stanford. And yes, he's a distant relative of the Stanfords that started Stanford University. And he's been a very naughty boy. He has been telling his investors that he had not been putting any of their money with Bernie Madoff's securities fraud pyramid scheme. And that was a little bit of a fib. And with Bernie Madoff's pyramid having collapsed, it was only a matter of time before it all caught up with Alan Stanford, who today was charged with some $8 billion worth of international financial fraud. Now, the response was almost immediate. There was a run on the banks owned by Alan Stanford, even though the banks themselves were not directly part of this feeder investment mechanism. Depositors were panicked, and they were lined up outside his banks throughout most of this hemisphere, and so they're struggling to deal with that. Alan himself is nowhere to be found. He has simply vanished. Probably he's over there, playing canasta with Ken Lay and the rest of the other mysteriously vanished ultra-rich oligarchs of the United States here. But that is definitely what's going on with yet another fraudulent investor that's collapsing. Won't be the last one. Will not be the last one at all. Our phone number here is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan is answering the phones in the control room. The webcam is running. The chat room at whatreallyhappened.com is also open if you want to send in some questions and information doing that. I need to get a second monitor on this computer because it's all too crammed together right now. Now, getting back to the economy here, General Motors has just announced that they're planning on cutting 47,000 jobs. They're going to close 5 of their factories. They haven't announced which ones yet. Chrysler is dumping 3,000 jobs. Now, these are the companies that only a couple of months ago, less than that, made off with some $17 billion in taxpayer money with the promise that this was going to prevent them from having to shut their businesses down and put all these auto workers out of work. And not only are they coming back and saying, well, we've got to shut the factories down anyway, they're saying they're going to need another $20 billion over what they've already gotten to try and get things back together. And folks, I got to tell you, we have taken the big three automakers and we've turned them into welfare queens. And the reason they're closing the factories and shutting down the all those jobs is because they've decided they don't need to make cars anymore. That's kind of icky and messy. We'll just have, you know, the candidates that we contribute to, they'll just keep giving us bailout. We'll still be getting the same money. Doesn't matter if we make cars or not anymore. And we keep hearing these stories about how all these CEOs and these executives, and they're still partying and going to resorts, and kind of an interesting audio tape surfaced earlier today, and it's also linked at whatreallyhappened.com, where the CEO is talking on a conference call and didn't realize it was being recorded, and he's reminding his people, remember, we're not calling them bonuses anymore because that's going to grate on the taxpayers for the bailout. We're calling them retention awards. And we're using that name. That way, if somebody says, are you guys getting any bonuses? You just say, no, we're not getting any bonuses. And you don't admit that you're getting any, huge payouts unless they know enough to say, are you getting retention awards? So they're playing these little kind of weasel word games to sort of evade the issue that they're taking money from the American taxpayer and they're putting it in their pockets. And, you know, we know what's going on. They're building their golden parachutes at taxpayer expense. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. Personally, I'm one of those who thinks that ultimately we're going to see the current government of the United States collapse, much in the manner of the former Soviet Union. And I think a lot of other people are seeing this. And those in a position to do so are looting the country or looting their own companies or looting their investors to basically build their own little nest eggs with which they will then run off to the Caymans or some other place for their, in their own minds, well-deserved retirement. Now, turning to the stock market, The Dow was kind of treading water today. It ended up like 3 points, which is within the noise factor. But looking at the chart, it was all over the place there. It was briefly down in the 7400s. I think we can basically at this point discard the former conventional wisdom that the bottom was going to be in the 8,000s. We're firmly in the 7,000s, and I will go one further. I will wager you an official what really happened coffee mug to the first one who calls me on it, that by this time in March, basically a month from now, we'll have been in the 6,000s at least once. I see that coming. I think it's pretty much on the way. And the reason I think that is very simple. When you take out the speculators who are attempting to buy the stocks high, buy the stocks low and then sell high to make a profit, or who buy them high and then try to short sell them in order to make more money. And they're basically playing gambling and the stocks or the chips and everything like that. If you take those people out, and you're looking at real serious long-term investors, which is what you get from the pension funds and the large investment groups who are really interested in earnings and dividends and so forth. And what you will find here is that the price of a stock is supposed to be based on its earnings. And this is what this is called, the P.E. ratio, a good, healthy P.E. ratio is about 16. And what that means is, if you go to buy a stock, if you were to buy a share of stock in What Really Happened LLC, or Inc., or whatever it has to be for us to sell stock, and we don't, so don't call. If you were to buy a share of stock in our company, the price of the stock would be 16 times what the dividend payments are in a single year. So if we pay out $100 in dividends on a share of stock in our corporation, then the price of the share of stock should be $1,600. That's basically how it's supposed to work in a stock market that allows ordinary Americans to share in the largesse of America's industry and productivity, which is what it was originally supposed to be. Now, here's the problem. Everybody who's buying stocks right now is buying them on the basis of past earnings. And at some point, they're going to start realizing that the past earnings for any given stock in the exchange isn't a valid and accurate predictor of what it's going to be earning in the future. At some point, there's going to be this collective aha on the trading floor where they're going to say, wait a minute, yeah, this stock in What Really Happened may have earned $100 last year, but that doesn't mean it's going to earn $100 this next year. I mean, looking at the state of the economy, it could earn maybe $20, could be absolute flat zero bust, which is not too far from the truth, I might add. And at that point, they're going to start saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to buy this stock at this price based on $100 earnings. You know, I'm not going to pay any more for it than based on what I think the earnings are going to be in the future, which continues downward and depressed. And at that point, you're going to see a real sudden sell-off as people are holding stocks that they realize the earnings aren't going to justify the prices. And we're seeing a lot of game playing and a lot of market rigging, and the speculators are still playing their games and trying to ride those curves up and down, you know, to make that little bit of extra money that's being squeezed out of the market. But for the long-term investors, we've got to be coming up on a point where they're going to say, wait a minute, we have no idea how these stocks are going to perform, and it's time to get out of them. Okay, the phone lines are actually starting to fill up, but we're almost at the first break, so I'm going to ask Kevin and Mike to hang on for just a minute, and I've got one more story before we go to the break, and then we'll take your phone calls. Basically, I was listening to Barack Obama talking about his foreclosure fix, and really all it comes down to is they're renegotiating the loans. They're making the descent into poverty a little bit more comfortable and pleasing. Why do we need a president to suggest what the banks and mortgage lenders should have already been thinking of all along? Or is our economy that tightly controlled by the government that it needs the president to say, back off on the lending practices and let these people keep their homes because you're going to make more money in the long run? Now, a big problem with this aspect of Barack Obama, and I think the reason why they... Oh, darn, I was just getting going. All right, we're going to take a break here. We've got callers waiting on the line. Donovan's answering the phones. When we come back, I've got to finish about this thing about the federal balance sheet and the toxic assets and why there's a hidden danger there. Then we'll start taking phone calls. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
We'll be right back. is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Pardon me for that little sound that leaked in from one of our many gadgets we have plugged into the mixer. We've got two callers waiting on the line. I'm going to get to you in just a minute, but I wanted to finish up this thought from the last segment. The government has sold all of these bailout bills to us with the promise that they were going to buy up all these so-called toxic assets, these overvalued properties that were in default, and they were going to take them off of the bank's balance sheets, and that was the reason for the billions and billions of dollars in taxpayer money. Then when TARP went through, there was a change, and they were going to just do direct cash infusions, and nobody knows where all these toxic assets went. And I think the reason they did that is the realization that if the government takes over these toxic assets, they have to be put someplace in the bookkeeping accounting sense, whether that's going to be on Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or on the Federal Reserve's books or on the federal government's books. And the danger with that, with such a sheer volume of these, admittedly, the most poisonous and dangerous assets that are out there, is that if they continue to depreciate in value, then in a paperwork sense, they could drive the U.S. or whoever's carrying them into insolvency, whether it's the Federal Reserve. And I know for all the money they've been taking from us, it's hard to imagine the Federal Reserve being in default or insolvent. But technically that could happen if they took over all of these toxic assets and the values of these properties continued to decline. So that was a point I just wanted to make here. We're going to go to the phones. Kevin in Ontario. Aloha, Kevin. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Is Kevin not there?
Oh, there we go.
Oh, there we are. Kevin?
Yes. Yeah, I didn't hear the sound before I went on the air here. Yeah,
well, I don't hear a psh either. So, well, it's going fine. What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, we're talking about the economy. I don't want to get into any very complex details because I think we'd be here all night long.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to talk, you know, about the stimulus yesterday. I'm going to flat out say that I think President Obama signed over the country to the New World Order.
I can understand why you would say that. I mean, basically, my problem with all of these bailouts is when you take all the frippery away from it, it just comes down to we're going to take another $1 trillion away from the American people, and we're going to give it to the bankers so the bankers can turn around and loan it back to the people at interest.
Yep, at interest, and then you're causing there's more interest than there is currency to pay it off, and that's how you become enslaved to the bank, to the banking cartels, and that's how the bank cartels pretty much own the government. And you take also into account the SPP program, where a lot of people say, well, why are you in Canada and commenting on U.S. Economics? Well, you see, they're planning on coming up with this North American Union and the one currency for both our countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to say that we're both in the same boat here when it comes to how the economy is being handled south of the border.
Well, you know, definitely it seems, at least from where I'm sitting, there are certain things that I know have to happen for our economy to come back to life, and our government isn't doing anything about it. There is no real significant tax relief for the people. We're being driven further and further into debt. Nobody's addressing the issue of bringing back manufacturing to the United States to provide the kind of high-paying jobs it takes to pay our debts. And it's either an incredible amount of short-sighted stupidity, or it really is an attempt to crash the U.S. economy to pave the way for something else. But whatever the agenda is, the bottom line is that going around the country and telling people who've gone into debt to train to be computer engineers and construction people and factory workers and office workers and telling them, well, you've got to make your money by filling in the holes in the roads for a while, that's not going to go over very well. That's a very, very difficult sell to the American people. We grew up with this idea that if we worked hard, we could better our lives. And the vast majority of us, we're seeing our lives deteriorate right before our eyes, no matter what we do, no matter how hard we work. And, you know, like I said, I think Barack and the U.S. government as a whole, they're doing all the wrong things. They're trying to solve the problem with bookkeeping tricks because they don't know how to do anything else. We've got a government of lawyers and accountants. They don't know how to do anything other than shuffle paper and numbers around and hope for the best. And, you know, we really need some manufacturing people to be voted into Congress.
Well, our government here is doing the same thing. They're putting us into debt, into even more debt, pretty much the same as what's happening down there. And it does seem like they are literally trying to crash the economies of both of our countries. And I can see it right now. You know, it's the old create the problem, gauge the reaction, and then offer the solution to fix it at a price. And I think the solution and the price is going to be the one currency for both our countries and Mexico, North American Union, and of course at the price of our rights. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. It seems to be going in that direction.
Yeah, it absolutely does, and I agree with that. We got to let you go. The phone lines are just jamming up right now, and the wires are starting to melt, so we got to take a few more calls here. So thanks an awful lot for the call. We're going to go to Ron in Colorado, and I'm sorry I missed you in the sequencing there, but I'm reading a lot of little text messages here. Ron, what's on your mind?
I'm from Colorado. We're the first state to... I'm sorry, sir?
I said, if I misstated the state, I apologize.
Oh, okay. We're the state that first wrote the autonomy for states against the federal government, claiming that the states form the government.
Yes, congratulations.
This goes way back into our history. Charlie Duke is the gentleman who introduced this to our legislature and voted on it. And I've done research on Charlie Duke. He's gotten beat up pretty bad since he's done this.
Yes.
He's gone out of politics. He's running pretty loose. In fact, he had such a great idea. I'd like to just stress that, because what happened when we had the Columbine Massacre, the federal agents got right in the middle of this because the two boys were building bombs.
Mm-hmm.
So we had FBI right there at the beginning. I'm a little nervous. But
wasn't one of the FBI's agents' own sons part of that group? He was their videographer or something like that?
Yeah, he was future. He had an obvious conflict of interest because his son did a video of the school blowing up before it happened. Well, we've learned a lot about this investigation. I'm close friends to the tragedy. Dear friend Donna Taylor, her son Mark got shot 8 times. I've been working with him since the beginning here.
We formed
a website called the CRTF, Columbine Research Task Force. And
yes, I've seen that. I've linked to it a couple of times, yeah.
Well, you gotta look at it real close now. I put a lot of good stuff on there recently. What we learned just recently, to get back to the main subject, the FBI was involved in this early because when the word bomb came up, it brought into this scenario an FBI agent, and this guy later on interviewed the killer's friends, and in the 11,000-page report, it shows that he never asked the killer's friends why their buddies killed, and we went right directly to that, thinking, by golly, this is going to answer some of these questions about these killers, why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't find anything. We thought that was real unusual. And now 8 of them are dead.
Okay, that is significant.
Taking them out.
That is significant. Unfortunately,
it's very significant.
Ron, we got a break here, and we got a bunch of other callers, so thank you. And call in some other time. Let me know what's going on with this Columbine situation, but we got to let you go for right now. We'll be back with Mike, Renee, and Bill after these words from our sponsors. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Before I go back to the phones, just real quick, if Ron in Colorado is still listening to the show, Ron, I need you to email me the URL for the Columbine Research Task Force website. I was unable to find it over the break. I wound up being directed to something called the Civil Rights Task Force, so it's not showing up in the web search engine. So if you would just email that to me, the email address is at the website at whatreallyhappened.com. Moving right along, we're going to go to Mike in Maryland. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, aloha to you, too. Thanks for taking my call. I was going to ask you a question about the automobile industry, but let me preface it by saying that I work the automobile business here in the D.C. area. I work for a wholesale distributor, and we sell GM and Ford parts to the dealerships and mom-and-pop garages in the area. And the past 4 years, we've seen at least a half dozen dealerships go under, maybe eight. And the parts, I'm the guy that pulls the parts from the shelf, and I deliver them in my little truck to the dealerships and everybody else. And I swear to God, between 80 and 90% of the parts, the Ford and GM parts that I pull from the shelf, are made in either Canada, Mexico, or China, and 9 or 10 other different countries. And the main question I have, I want to ask is, when are these, and I'm against all bailouts, bankers, you name it, I'm against them all. I'm a paleo conservative. I'm for limited government. But my question is, when are these bailouts for the big two and possibly three going to end? I mean, is it going to be like Amtrak, where there are going to be permanent wards of the state? What's your opinion on that?
I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. I mean, they've already taken $17 billion. They're coming back asking for another $20 billion. And, yeah, more than one bailout, you're talking about a permanent government subsidy. And we've had subsidized industries in this country as a form of political entitlement. We saw large farm subsidies were going for a long time. And they were like a source of pure pork. We had people living in New York City that were getting farm subsidies because they were letting their lawns go fallow or something silly like that. And so it's always going to be abused. But I am like you. I think that if Ford and GM and Chrysler can't make a product people want to buy, then, you know, they need to, you know, collapse, get out of the way of somebody who's maybe got a better idea, like the next DeLorean or the next Tucker or one of those innovators who comes along and says there's a better way to make this happen, because we can't do what the other countries are already doing better than we are. We've got to innovate, and we've got to come up with something so new and radical that the United States is the only country that knows how to make it. Then we get our manufacturing back. I'll tell you one thing, though, what you're talking about, those parts. We should have definitely made it a requirement of every industry getting a bailout, that from now on they're getting all of their parts and supplies from American suppliers. Lots of luck, a lot of politics there. The reason we're in this mess is because during the Bush administration, the tax laws were changed to give tax incentives to corporations to make it easier to ship the manufacturing jobs overseas. What kind of lunacy was this? I have no idea. But the bottom line is, all of a sudden, people who were earning, you know, $70,000-$80,000 a year, they're down to earning $50,000 a year, and they're starting to miss their mortgage and credit card payments. And our financial whiz kids are standing around the Beltway scratching their heads and saying, gee, what the heck happened out there?
Well,
and,
sure.
You know, and it's like too much adherence to Adam Smith and not much respect for John Nash's opinions on that whole theory. But the bottom line is, absolutely, we're buying all of our parts from other countries. We don't make anything those other countries want to buy from us, and that is really the crux of the problem. I have no problem with it being imported products, but there have got to be exports to match them. We have not had that for years.
Well, and I talked to the mechanics and the guys who work in the shop and stuff, and they say that since they've gone to more importer parts, they've had a lot bigger failure rate. And,
yes.
And it's like feeding the stray cat. We just start feeding that cat, and you own it. It's never going to go away. And the whole irony of the situation is, GM hinted to the government of Sweden to help bail out Saab, and the great socialist, neo-communist country of Sweden said, hell no, we're not going to bail out Saab. They're on their own. Isn't that ironic?
It is very ironic. But remember, we're not socialist in this country right now. We're fascist. And by that I mean, profits are kept private. If you're making a lot of money with your company, you get to put it in your pocket. But losses are being socialized. And that's what that is the essence of a fascist economic state. Now, communism, profits and losses are socialized. In fascism, only the losses are socialized, which is just, it's a fancy way for robbing the poor to give to the rich.
It's insane.
Yes, it is. Mike, thank you very much for the call.
Great job.
Thank you very much. We got to move on to Renee in North Carolina. Aloha, Renee. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, I'm on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. I didn't know it was my turn. Yes, I agree with you about the fascist thing. Everybody keeps hollering socialism, socialism, but I think you're right. The real problem is fascism. I think you nailed it. And see, that's a lot of the issue is that I have is, you know, there are a lot of issues that we will not particularly agree on. But, you know, we're up against a really big force here that is highly organized in trying to keep its long end of the stick and keep us with the short end. And if we're going to have a chance of winning, we have to fight smarter. You know, they put out their talking points. It's like there are certain things I think that we all can agree on, like this double standard of how the people in government are not held accountable for egregious crimes where we're held accountable for insignificant little small stuff. I think that that is something everybody can agree on and get behind, because we need to start using some of their techniques. You know, these people put out their talking points because they understand the power of repetition. And this is something, too, that the government people, it's hard for them to argue against this kind of unfairness and the way justice is meted out between civilians versus government workers without looking like jackasses. So the thing is, I think this is, if we could kind of, you know, a lot of the hosts could get together and really kind of pound this idea and some others that we all agree on into the public consciousness, I think we could be more effective, you know, because, like, you know, recently you and many others reported on this whole issue with the judges who were for profit sending these kids to detention centers. Well,
yes.
That went on for years. Well, to me,
yep.
Also, the bailiff that was in the courtroom, the court reporter, the judge's assistants, all these people are accessories, in my opinion. They should have spoken up way sooner. This went on for years. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not just the judges, but every person in that courtroom, because it just goes to show how systemic the problem is and how all these little accessories keep their mouths shut, and they are a part of the problem.
Well, they definitely are. You know, I mean, we've seen whistleblower protections basically bypassed or dropped entirely in recent years. And the reality is, especially in a tight job market, these people working in government jobs overall are getting paid one-third more than private citizens for doing exactly the same work. And so they don't want to lose that because, you know, that's a lot of money for doing, you know, relatively
nothing.
Little work. Yeah, well, not nothing. I wish they were doing nothing and leave us the heck alone. But, you know, they don't want to give that up. And people who are getting that kind of money for doing relatively easy work, they can talk themselves into believing anything. I mean, go back and look at the witch hunts in medieval Europe. You know, you had people who were paid to hunt witches, and by golly, they convinced themselves that these women were really turning themselves into black cats and hopping on their brooms and riding over the tops of the roofs in the middle of the night. They talked themselves into believing that because
I agree.
That made it okay to take the money for turning them in.
I agree 100%, and that's why one of my favorite sayings is that of Da Vinci, and he said, people believe what they want to believe, and that's why I'm in the habit of this, isn't a good habit for everybody to adopt. You know, we're continually confronted every day with choices to make on what to believe, and I always ask myself, it's like, am I believing this because it makes me feel better, it makes me feel more comfortable, or it makes me feel more safe, or I get to feel that I'm
okay,
a better person, or
Renee,
is it really what...
Renee, got to let you go. All right. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. We've got two callers on the line, Bill in Texas. Bill, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was just changing stations the other day, and someone had called in, and they had asked about what happened to the oil revenue money to pay for the Iraq war? And the radio host goes, well, that never happened. And I'm going, I remember it being on the news and the government saying that. And I was just trying to touch base with you to see if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, I definitely remember that. And I remember when they made that promise, I said, it's never going to be kept. It's just a way to try and sell the war, because war is a racket by which we are bled for taxes, and whoever's conquered is bled for tribute, and it all goes into private pockets. I mean, just yesterday we had this story come out where the supreme military commanders in Iraq, our guys, our American military commanders, are under investigation for some $50+ billion. I mean, it's even more than Bernie Madoff made off with. Of the Iraq reconstruction money has just completely vanished. They don't know where it went. It's gone into somebody's pocket. I mean, I don't know about you, but I remember the big news story of September 10th, 2001, was Donald Rumsfeld getting up in a news conference at the Pentagon and saying, well, we've managed to misplace $2.3 trillion with a T. Should have been the financial story of the century, but of course, 24 hours later, 9/11 happened. The plane that hit the Pentagon actually hit the offices of the people trying to find where that money had gone to, and that was the end of the story. So, yeah, whatever money was being made off of the Iraq war, you and I will never see it. That wherever that oil is going, it is not for your benefit. It's not for my benefit. War is waged by the many to enrich the few.
And I know you got a lot of callers, but I also heard that some states are claiming now that if you collect rainwater, you're stealing the water from the state and they're going to have to do something about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're desperate for revenues. Anything that they can come up with that you're going to be suckered in by, they're going to tax you for. They're talking about up in Massachusetts, they're now going to charge you a tax by the mile you drive on the road. Now, your gas taxes are already supposed to be paying for highway upkeep. But no, this is going to be, the theory is, well, if you drive more, you should pay more. Well, if you drive more, you're buying more gas, so you're automatically paying more. But they're going to try and push this through. They're trying to push all the carbon taxes. Now we're hearing from down in Australia, there's actually going to be a tax per flush of the toilet. That is how absurd it is getting. Somewhere down the road, they'll tax you for how much you breathe because you're putting out carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. You know, the government is desperate for anything that you will fall for, that you will surrender up those last few pennies in your pocket. Because the one unalterable agenda of the government is you must make do with less so that the government can have more. They have never wavered from that policy in 200 years. The problem is, we the people, we don't have it.
Did you ever read Eisenhower's editorial to the New York Times? He wrote it about a year and a half after he left office, and basically saying his was the last true presidency, and everything after him was controlled by the money machine of war.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he said it so many different ways. His farewell address was significant. The Cross of Iron speech is a classic. If you have not read that or heard it, you've got to go back, because Eisenhower tried to warn us. And if you go to the top of whatreallyhappened.com, there's an article up there called The New McCarthyism, where I draw the obvious parallels between the push for a Cold War with Russia and how the media was used to smear anybody who dissented back then versus the push for war in Iran and the rest of the Middle East. And again, the media is just smearing anybody who speaks out against it. And we need to go back to the past to learn how to deal with the current situation. But yeah, Eisenhower was absolutely correct. You could see it on his face. He was furious at what was being done around him by this incredible war machine that he had at one point been in charge of. Anything else?
No, that's it. And enjoy your show, and thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you, Bill. And we're going to switch over to Manny in Texas. Manny, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Michael, I just have a question. I haven't been listening for a long time, but you were speaking about like the 401ks and all this financial stuff, and I was wondering what's going to happen, or in your opinion, what's going to happen with like the state employees' retirement accounts and stuff?
Well, technically, officially, all of those are insured. So they're supposed to be relatively immune from these financial shortfalls. Now, that's the official story. Unofficially, the company that is carrying the insurance on these pension funds and retirement funds is already in trouble. and they're trying to circle the wagons. But the bottom line is we are still not seeing the depths to which this Bernie Madoff fraud, and now we've got this new one by Alan Stanford to add to it, which is another $8 billion on top. We may discover, because the SEC was so asleep at the switch over the last decade, we may discover that most, if not all, of our, you know, what appear to be successful investment groups were playing some very funny games behind the scenes as the economy started to go south back in 2007. And they all sort of figured, well, we'll play a little pyramid Ponzi now and we'll make good on it all when the economy turns around. And they got caught by what is known as gambler's ruin. So I'd like to be optimistic about these state retirement funds, but I mean, state of California has had to stop issuing checks. Kansas is probably going to be next doing that. The only state that's not in trouble is in Nebraska because they have a constitutional amendment that says they can only spend the money they actually own.
I just started listening, and I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you very much, and tell all your friends.
All right, thank you.
All right, that was Manny down in Texas. And, yeah, that's a concern. And you know, beyond that, there's this huge social price that we're all paying for what's going on. I mean, this whole decade of greed, two decades of greed, really, we're paying a huge social price. We've lost our manufacturing. We've lost our reputation for being a moral and virtuous people around the world. We're now seeing we use torture. You know, our reputation is in shattered. The nation that I thought I lived in, the nation I was born into, is pretty much destroyed. 8 years of the Bush presidency has done more damage to the United States than 1,000 Osama bin Ladens could have ever dreamt of doing. Our self-image is in the gutter, and it's horrific. And we're seeing all these Americans, and more of them every day. I got to tell you, I was in downtown Honolulu earlier today, and just driving along, and I saw all these signs, you know, building available for lease. This, I think the only company that's still doing well in Honolulu is the company that's painting all these little signs for the real estate agents to put up there, because everything else is just shutting down. And for every one of these for sale signs, or for every one of these eviction piles that we see out on the edge of the road, where the entire contents of somebody's home or condo has just been dumped there as they lose their home, that's another American family who worked their entire lives. They saved, they did everything they were taught they were supposed to do in terms of investment and retirement planning and 401k and insurance, and did everything right, and their life is still dissolving in front of them. And we're seeing people with advanced college degrees having to go to work in fast food joints and amusement parks. Not that working in an amusement park is a bad experience. I had a lot of fun when I did it back in my college days. But the point is, what kind of a lesson is this teaching the up-and-coming generation? We're trying to convince these kids to go to college and, you know, and acquire very useful skills, and they see all around them those skills aren't needed in this society anymore. You know, fill holes in the road and flip burgers. That's what the American workforce is being told they need to do. And I think we're going to come out of this crisis, even if we don't see the collapse of the U.S. government itself, we're going to have another lost generation that we saw follow World War I, or call the beatniks following World War II, but it was the same thing. We're going to have a generation of people who are convinced that it doesn't matter how hard they work, and it doesn't matter how much they save, because it can just all evaporate at a moment's notice because of the government idiocy. And I think we're going to be paying the price for our current situation for 50, 60 years. Doesn't matter what the economy does. Doesn't matter what the Dow goes up. We're going to be paying a social price for the next 50 to 60 years, because we're going to have a generation of young people who are just becoming adults, and they're going to grow up with this terrible sense of hopelessness and fatalism and malaise. Why should I work? The government can take it away from me in a moment's notice. There's no reason for me to try and do any better than I'm doing right now. Live for the moment. And I'm beginning to already see that happen. All right, that's the end of our show today. We'll be back tomorrow, Thursday show. Thank you to all the callers. That was great. I love it. I love all the calls. It makes the show so much more fun for everybody. So we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay safe. Hug your loved ones. Drive carefully. A lot of road rage out there. And aloha, America.